I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Okay, right on time. A Sabres winning streak. I'm sorry. Mike Shope here. Glad to have you. Bulldog is off again today, and he'll be off Monday, I think, before returning after that. Although Tuesday, the day I'm expecting him back, is April Fool's Day, so I'm not sure what to expect. Joining me now on the West Her Hotline, expected Buffalo founder Chad DeDominicis to talk some Sabres. Chad, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. I wasn't even sure earlier today, just by instinct, like if the Sabres are mathematically alive, but are they dead? I realized the problem I was having was that I was dead about it all, but, you know, 10, 11 games left, 9 points. They can't be eliminated left. Not every game is going to be Columbus against Detroit. So you went ahead and tweeted like that they were still in it, and I assume with some sarcasm, but just want to say how dare you.
I think the money puck chart that they put out all the time, they actually got themselves back on the chart, though, today. They're back at 0.1%, I think. So
I was looking for that. I didn't see it, but the other day I noticed they were not even shown, which is what made me wonder. They're right back in it. Chad, how will this season be for you, assuming they do fall short, for how annoying it is? I mean, there's the accumulation of the years that just that becomes so much of how we react to it. It's been so long. But won't with the five on five play and, you know, Thompson's year and maybe a few other things, a couple of other guys having career years, this might be right near the top of seasons in this drought for, I mean, just you can't believe it almost.
Yeah, it's up there. I mean, it's not as bad as other years, I guess you could say. But the year they missed by a point, like, it was just like the goaltending. I don't think it's like that this year. A lot of their 5-on-5 numbers as a team, for the most part, are not great. Like, their expected goal share, they're near the bottom still, like 28th. Their shot share, they've always been near the top, and that's because early in the season they were spamming, you know, low danger shots, and that's kind of carried them. Hmm. But even that has started to dip. But it's really the scoring and the goal differential. Goal differential of 5-on-5, you know, they're 15th in the league, so the 51%. They're one of the highest scoring 5-on-5 teams in the league. They're actually second in the league behind the Capitals, which is insane. But really, it's the, you know, we're back again. The goaltending, you know, they are 27th in goals against per 60 at 5-on-5. So it's the goaltending, the defense. It's those things that are back up again. And, of course, you know, special teams, power play, penalty kill, runs hot and cold. But really, it's the power play from the very beginning has been just dreadful. And this is the second year in a row of that. And that, maybe for me, is the most frustrating thing, is that's what you hoped would improve under Ruff. And then you brought in Appert, which really bringing in Appert, you're kind of getting what they had in the AHL, but that's, you know, a different conversation. But, yeah, I think the power play really is the most frustrating, because if that was just maybe a little bit better, maybe you don't lose 13 games and you're maybe on the playoff spot, but maybe instead of 9, and we're joking around about 0.1%,
right?
Maybe you're 4.
Right.
And, like, you know, if we get lucky here, get on a run, and everybody in ahead of us is losing games, you know, but yet here we are.
It's still not close enough to be that, yeah. The power play thing, it really is confounding with the new head coach, but also, like, this, the talent is kind of obvious. Last year, too, that you would think you would have enough, you know, scoring talent to be able to, I don't know, maybe this is naive, I guess it is, overcome whatever structural deficiencies you have.
No, it's not a talent issue at all. And, yeah, I mean, the best example of it is look at Dylan Cousins, who looks like he could not be a power play player at all on this team. he goes to Ottawa for 2 weeks, and all of a sudden he's this power play merchant and has all these power play points. And even the one power play goal Ottawa scored against the Sabres, like, oh, man, that's a nice play. Like, you rarely, if ever, maybe once a month or once every 3 months, see that kind of play from the Sabres. And, you know, Apper in the beginning of the year said, you know, we're not going to sit and just feed Tage for bombs, but really the strategy is like, we're just going to give it to Tage and Darlene and shoot and hope, and we'll mix in some, you know, nice plays here and there. And it just, it doesn't work. You know, they're not scoring, obviously. They're expected goals per 60 at the power play is 28th in the league, so it's pretty bad. I think there was a joke at the beginning of the year. They were actually a negative goal differential team on the power play at one point. That was very early in the season, but still, that was the thing. So, yeah, pretty bad and frustrating with the talent that they do have.
You definitely don't want that. And when you have that, you're at a game and the Sabres are playing somebody who takes a penalty, and somebody around you, you hear say, decline the penalty, and then you have you have the whole eye roll thing and just the whole dance. Chad DeDominicis, my guest here on WGR. On goalies, Luukkonen, like, is this just more throw your hands up? This is goaltending in the NHL. We know the randomness of it is just impossible, almost impossible to overcome. What better explanation would you have for his season?
I don't think I do, to be honest. You know, the way I put it, we've done a lot of work with goaltenders over the last 3 years on the site. You know, Anthony's done a few things about kind of the randomness of it. You know, last year I really dove into stuff because of the Levi thing that blew up on their face. And it's really, there's only 3 to 4 goaltenders in this league that are going to be consistently year in, year out, top great goaltenders. And you know, for the people that are saying, well, they should go out and they should spend, you know, and get a goaltender, a trade for a goaltender, like, I don't really think you need to do that, because unless you're getting one of the top guys, which you're not, you're just getting another version of Luukkonen. In some sense, it could be more expensive version. I mean, the way the goaltenders are getting contracts right now, $4.75 million is not that bad for a goaltender, especially what he's giving you. So really, you got to hope that he bounces back. A lot of the smart people on social media kind of point to Gustafson in Minnesota. You know, maybe you get that track. Really good season, got paid pretty bad last year, and now he's back to having a really strong season again. And that's just the up and downs of goaltending. And you just have to hope that, you know, the down years are not as down as this season is for him, and it's more in the middle, and then your up years are closer to what you got last year. And, you know, you kind of just ride that wave. And, of course, improving your defense will help that. You know, it's so, yeah, I mean, Reimer takes over right now. And maybe that's kind of the frustrating thing, too, in the beginning of the season. You know, if you didn't waive Reimer and you kind of just kept him and Devon Levi didn't drown for a month, you know, maybe you have a couple more points on the board, because he has shown he's plenty capable. And funny enough, Anthony's research project did, like, 2 years ago, like, Reimer graded out as one of the more consistent goaltenders year in and year out of what you're getting. And we're kind of seeing that this year. He's not great, but he's not terrible either. He's kind of just in the middle of the pack, and that's what he is once again for them this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, Chad, like, it's so easy to pile on the Sabres, and there are reasons to do it. These goalie moves they've made for several years, I've had a hard time being critical. Not that I'm wanting to be necessarily. It's just sort of, I get it. I thought Comrie, like, I get it. And you made the point that Adams has made, Kevin Adams, and I've made it, that you don't really know what you're getting. You know, you think you're getting this, but you're getting that. And that's sort of the nature of the position. So other than sort of just pushing Levi in right out of college, and maybe, I'm not even sure they really expected that to work, but that's what they did. And it cost them last year. So otherwise, though, like, even paying Luukkonen, right? Like, even paying him they did after last year, I guess I want to say it made sense.
Yeah, and I mean, really, if you think about it, like I said, they got in at the right time. I mean, Kevin Lankinen was a goaltender who went into camp on a PTO, then got a job, full-time job, got a job in Vancouver off of that.
Yep.
And then 4 months later, he has a $5.25 million contract. You're like, whoa. So, like, you know, maybe it did make sense to do it when they did. You might not love the 5 years, but there's that contract isn't immovable if it really gets to a point where it's not working. you know, you can get out of that. And you have Levi, and they brought another goaltender over. They just signed today, and we'll see how that goes in a few years. But, yeah, I mean, it's and the way to get one of those top guys is to just draft them. So, really, it kind of almost like the joking running back joke is you should probably draft a goalie every year because you don't really know. And you just flush your system with them, and maybe one pops out for you, and you get an elite one in there, and then you ride that for 10 years.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you kind of find the best average goaltender you can and hope you get more ups than you do downs.
Even historically, thinking about the Sabres, like what was Ryan Miller? Like a fifth-round pick or something like that, wasn't it?
I think, yeah, fifth or sixth, yeah.
What was Hasek? Like kind of a throwaway trade with Chicago. I don't know when he was drafted, but that wasn't like a big move when they got him, and he's the best ever. So I'm listening to this take for sure. So one thing I've been saying is just with going back to before the deadline, signing Zucker, signing Greenway, signing Bryson. I mean, that leaves Reimer as their only UFA, I believe. What do you think? Right. What do you think of the strategy here? If it can be made into one strategy, like individually, I think my opinion individually, I couldn't understand why you would do each thing. Maybe Bryson least of all, but the two forwards. But yeah. I worry for just how that means less flexibility in the offseason. And I don't want this to be sarcastic, right? Because somebody could easily say, well, if you're the Sabres, what do you need flexibility for? Like, who's going to sign here? I don't want to sort of settle for that.
Right.
How do you see it?
Yeah, it's a tough path to go down. Because like you said, people don't want to hear it, but it's also, at the same time, it's a real thing. So, I mean, you have to understand that and appreciate it. And then also the way the no move and no trade clauses in the league, that I guess you could say gotten out of hand, in a sense, that makes it more difficult, too. So you kind of have to really attack those guys, in a sense, that are like Josh Norris or even a little bit younger, maybe, that don't have those second contracts or RFAs, and you can go see, look for a team that's looking to just make a swap, like a Bo Byron kind of thing, something like that. Look for those guys, and that's how you have to go about it, and you have to do it. I mean, this team, you know, really, you mentioned flexibility. Like, they can be as flexible as they want to be. There's ways to get out of things. There's ways to make trades. Like, a lot of people, you know, made you believe that Cousins didn't have much value, and then, oh, look what he got you.
Yep.
So you can find your trades if you really want to. It's just how eager and willing do they want to be. What is going to happen with a few guys? Like, Paterka is an interesting one who, you know, there's been a lot of rumors out there that maybe there's some, I don't know, unhappiness on his side. I kind of heard the opposite of that, but, you know, we'll see how that plays out. That could just be an agent thing because his agent's a little bit, you know, one of the more outspoken agents, I guess, the way I'll put it.
Okay.
So that could be that to drive up that contract negotiation. But that's going to be interesting to see where that goes and what they want to do with him in the offseason. And then that kind of sets up. And then it gets to Byram. I mean, the Chikrin thing that happened, you know, I get it that Byram's not a UFA this year. He's an RFA, but he's pretty close to UFA status. And, you know, I put a tweet out. If you look at Owen Power, his camp is within – you know, they're right to point to that. And I think Owen Power got a little bit over 9% of the cap hit at the time he signed it. And then 9.4 or whatever percent of the cap hit at $95 million works out to $9 million. Who here wants to pay Bo Byram $9 million? I don't want to pay him 8. I don't even really want to pay him 7. Because the last month has shown that, you know, away from Darlene, here and there, there's some good moments. But for the most part, it's been pretty dreadful.
It's buried.
So do you want to pay somebody $7.5 million to 8 or more to just be a Darlene partner? You can throw almost anybody there and be fine. So there's some big decisions, but I mean, they can be really as flexible as they want to be, depending how deep they want to get into, you know, restructuring this roster.
But Byram worries me. Well, you didn't say you were worried, but he worries me too, I was going to say, because it feels like the kind of player who's good enough and they traded for him. Kevin Adams has alluded to this trade many times since he made it, about like the hockey trade aspect of it. And I thought it was a fine idea. But if it helps them lead them to a conclusion that they should make him the next whatever, all these defensemen they've signed for such long term and for so much money, I mean, I would just hate it. Okay, that it's hard, it's challenging to get guys, and here you've got a guy who may or may not want to stay. But if I, especially if I have to overpay him to be the player, no. I mean, it's just an easy no.
Yeah, I'm in the same spot, and I get your whole point if they traded for him, and you know that Adam has mentioned him, but I would not be surprised if he's not on the team next season. I think there's a reason that they're pulling him away from Delling randomly. They didn't just do it just to do it when that was working so well. I think they're trying to get an answer on something, and they're probably getting their answer, and it might lead them to do something else. And I think really if it came down to a decision, to be perfectly honest, between Byram and Paterka, they probably lean Paterka, and then that might force them to something else with Byram. And, you know, maybe you swing Byram for a team who's looking to get rid of a top four vet. They want to bring in a younger guy and, you know, somebody who believes that he's a power play guy, which I don't think he really is. But if someone wants to think that he is, then, you know, let them take him, let them pay him, and you take the veteran that has a year or two left and put him in your top four, and then you're on your way.
Assuming your guess or even, you know, your knowledge on this is right about what they're doing with Byram, it still doesn't work for me, like, looking back at it. Like, the right move, if you... I guess if you had to feel this way, but the right move was to trade him at the deadline, and I got to think that would have been possible, even with an RFA status. I mean, the guy is young, and so the next team could think he might be a building block and to help them this year. So I don't know. Yeah. The way you put it, do the Sabres really need this answer on him?
I don't know. I think maybe it's validation. I do think, like, I'm pretty sure that they had conversations surrounding him. I do know that he was part of the Elias Pettersson conversations when they had that. He was one of the pieces that they were going to put in that deal if that was to happen. So his name was out there. I think they had conversations about it. But I think what their focus was and what they ultimately got done is they wanted to – well, they identified the core piece they wanted to change, which was Cousins, and that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to change this core, in a sense, send a message, rip a core piece out of there. If you're trading Byram and you keep Cousins, that's not really sending a message of I'm ripping a core piece out.
No, that's right.
So I think they focused on Cousins, and they figured let's get some more clarifying answers on Byram by moving some things around, and then they can, you know, go at it in the offseason. I don't think it's going to change anything. The same team that would have traded for him in March probably still be interested in June or July. So
okay.
I don't think that really... Them that much.
I wondered about that because, like, other teams are getting this answer too, right? And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, but some of his numbers, I think, too, can. Well, there's a couple of things. One, there are teams that will 100% believe, well, it's the Sabres, get him here, he'll be fine. He was a big part of what he was in Colorado on a good team in their cup run. He also has the offensive numbers. So any general manager is going to see his 5-on-5 production, they're going to see how he played on the power play in Colorado. His skating and all. So he has the flashiness where they'll be like, yeah, I get it. His defense maybe isn't that good, but we have a guy here. We'll put him with him and we'll in a sense surround him and do all that. So I think there's enough tools and there's enough stuff that you can just watch. And of course, points are still a big thing in this league. That will make him still to be a valuable piece in the offseason.
Reminds me of Montour a little bit in certain ways.
A little bit. Yes.
You know,
yep.
Bring him to us. He's got the Buffalo stink on him. Just bring him over here. We're going to do this. Which team making the playoffs this year, if the Sabres are not to, will be the most annoying? I would say for me, like it's been the Islanders like 5 different years for this. Just like not even that good. I mean, I'm jealous of all of them. I said at the beginning of the show today, I hate it. Ranges between 31 and 32 NHL teams. Which team will drive you the craziest if they make it?
Probably whoever ends up at Wild Card 2 in the East because they're a terrible team.
Canadians?
Whoever, Canadiens, Islanders, Rangers. I mean, on it looks like the pace right now is 87, but I'm telling you that Wild Card 2 team is going to be like 85 points. And it's going to be ridiculous that they're even in. But they're going to play the Capitals and like...
Maybe win.
I don't know. Like, right. I mean, the Capitals, like, I heard you talking about them earlier, and I agree to an extent. Some of their team underlying numbers are more impressive. So, I mean, that kind of leads me to believe they'll be fine and they'll get through the first round at least, especially the team they're going to line up against most likely. because none of these teams also are walking in with like a powerhouse goaltender that's going to really. Oh, well, I guess the Rangers could. But beyond that, I don't really think you have to worry about that. But yeah, I guess the Wild Card 2 team, beyond that, I don't know.
That has to be
Blues.
It.
The Blues maybe the Blues. Would be annoying because, like, I don't know, was Binnington going to try to fight people in a series or something like that? Like, but beyond that, it's probably the Wild Card 2 team in the East.
Yeah, that's it. Ottawa has separated a little bit, and whoever it is, it'll be a pretty easy argument that the Sabres might be better. Bottom line, yeah. Might be better than that team. Okay, well, let me just ask you honestly, should we still be hopeful?
Like in the future?
For this season, is there any? I mean, I know what I'm asking by this question, but sweep the weekend, and then what?
That's what I keep telling people. Win both games this weekend. Maybe you get a couple more losses, and the team's ahead of you. And then I don't know if you're sitting 5 or 6 points out. Maybe, but I mean, look at the schedule coming too. It's not the easiest. So, I mean, and this team always does this. They'll get within, like, well, you know, you get a couple games, and they'll lose three in a row, and like, well, let it go with that.
Just like it happened right after the tournament, right? Where, like, we a little bit talked ourselves into them making a run, and they lost those two Canadiens games.
Yeah. So. I think, like, to get to 85 points, they have to go 10-1. So if that gives you your answer.
10-1, baby. That's how these things have to end. They have to end spectacularly. Like the Bills ending the drought with a -50 point differential and just like getting blown out and starting Peterman, yet that's the year they make it. For the Sabres, it has to be like this. Like the last time they made it, it was a little bit like this. So, all right. Thank you, Chad.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
ExpectedBuffalo.com, Chad DeDominicis, our guest. I know. I can't. See, this is the problem Bulldog and I both face all the time about the Sabres. Like, even to sort of ask the question is like, I feel just imagining someone driving in their car being like, Shope, really, again? But how would you handle it if it's like your kid's team? Play to the whistle. And we haven't heard the whistle yet. So Flyers tomorrow, an actually mediocre Washington team that leads the conference, if not the NHL in points. I don't know. 803-0550 to comment. NFL draft as well. Yesterday I did baseball. It was really fun hearing from listeners who were telling me why their favorite baseball team is their favorite baseball team. I might have, you know, a little bit of interest in a couple more of those. We'll see what happens. Thanks for listening. Bulldog is off today. Mike Shope here on WGR.
Byram out of the corner. Kulik up top. Scores! What a shot! Jiří Kulík! And it's 5-1 Buffalo.
Sabres romp over the Penguins. Nice to talk to Chad DeDominicis just now from Expected Buffalo. The takeaway line for me from him, because I've been just sort of complaining about, sure, keep all your free agents, run it back, right? Like, how will that go over? What will that be, more importantly? In a vacuum, I guess, Greenway, Zucker, McLeod has been good. Like, they've had guys who have really performed, at least so Greenway. I mean, he's had injuries, but other guys who've really performed pretty much as well as you could have wanted. And so, in that sense, sure, bring them back. If they want to be here, pay them, whatever. But it's also this idea that, well, I can't do other things. Other ideas come up. Somebody calls and they've got a player available that you didn't expect. Just different. I want to have balls in the air. I want to be able to do different creative things to my roster. Being a team that's going so long without winning, feel like that is paramount. And this strategy sort of precludes that. But Chad said they could be as creative as they want to be. There are ways. And yeah, that's right. And I should remind myself of that. Because it's not enough just to say, like, well, there's not that much room on the roster now. You make room. You figure it out. And the Sabres have, among other things, like they have been unable to be creative enough to give themselves that edge that other teams enjoy. That's taking on, remember when Patrick Marleau was traded, I think, to Carolina, and really just to, the Leafs got a draft pick or something, they got out from a contract they didn't want, Carolina just took it, and maybe they got the draft pick, whatever it was, like just a way to sort of fiddle around with the cap. Hockey has kind of always had loopholes for whatever reason. Like, I'm thinking of Marian Hossa right now and a deal that he got with a top team, Chicago or Detroit, where like they didn't pay him anything, but it was, I don't know, deferred. I don't remember. Just, it's kind of been like a staple in Sabres life that they're not going to do the outside kind of thing that can give them that edge that other teams, some other teams at least, will do. And really that just comes down to foresight and creativity and then money, right? I mean, anybody could have, I would think every general manager has seen moves like that, but they don't all work for teams that would do it. And they're not all either. There aren't that many guys like this. Maybe there are more than I think, but there's only a small number of players that sort of fit this criteria where they're not going to play anymore. But, you know, you take on the contract and they just basically don't exist, but they're on your books, that kind of thing. You know, Byram, maybe Chad is right. I respect him very much that he'll be the same. He'll be the same kind of commodity, so to speak, in the offseason that he would have been at the deadline or is now. I didn't mean that you wouldn't have made the Cousins trade if you had flipped Byram. I was thinking you could do that anyway and sort of make the decision that, you know, I don't have a player here that I want to invest big in, and that's what I'm going to have to do if I keep him, or else he's going to get away for nothing. That's simply what that is. And I still think that's the case when it comes to him. And, you know, I want the Sabres to be a team, not that this is to say I have to be right in this case, but to be a team that sort of gets a jump on it, has the answers before it's too late, and can figure out what they've got, and then act with conviction accordingly. And maybe sometimes they're afraid to trade away young pieces because of all the many times it's burned them. You know, and those are often for different circumstances, and they're not all under Adam's employ. But, you know, Eichel and Reinhart famously, how they got away, and then they went and won cups, just like it's embarrassing. So Byram has already won once, and he goes to a good team. I mentioned Montour as a comparison, and then they win. And they're their best selves. And the Sabres have not mostly been able to get the best version of their players. Cousins is the latest, who, I mean, it's only a few games for him so far, and we'll see if he's ever the player he was a couple of years ago. He doesn't have to be. But right away, sort of immediately was, oh yeah, this guy has been a player, and he just was not helping me at all. So it goes on. If you have a thought on it, and I don't blame you if you don't, you know, okay. 803-0550 is the number. Chad also mentioned goal differential when we were talking about 5-on-5. The teams on the outside of the playoff race in the East, I mean, the Sabres' goal differential period, including special teams, is almost as good as anybody. Just the Rangers, Columbus are a few goals under. Buffalo is minus 22. The Islanders are minus 19 and are 9 points, 8 points ahead. The Red Wings are minus 23, worse, and are 6 points ahead. Boston is minus 50 and is ahead. Philadelphia is minus 50, ahead in points. The Penguins are minus 57. Ahead in points. Like, it's always something. Well, we'll see what the weekend brings. Philadelphia's bad, and Washington is not bad, but I don't think great, even though they've had a great season. So maybe we can have something to talk about on Monday. I'd give a lot for it. I'd love to have it. Just the likeliest scenario for this season at this point is it ends, they kind of split their remaining games, and they finish 8 or 10 points out. And it's kind of how it always has felt. The best case scenario is the miraculous run. Chad says they need to go 10-1, something like that. Also in there is and it's kind of already been, I've already been feeling it the last week. They win enough games to just miss. And that will make us all crazy. You'd rather, arguably, you'd rather they lose by finish farther out than like barely miss because of all the, just like 2 years ago, all the games and the potential movement, the things you could have done differently to break this drought for once and for all, but ended up not being able to do it. I don't know if I want the Sabres to miss by one game again. If they do that, though, it's going to be a kind of fun final 3 weeks. Yesterday, opening day in the major leagues. I meant to look this up, but I'm going to wing it. So the Yankee game we were talking about through the day was on in here, ended with Jackson Churio of the Brewers against former Brewer Devin Williams. Bases loaded, like the, I think it was bases loaded. The game was on the line. And Churio, who was this very exciting prospect, good rookie outfielder from Milwaukee, struck out, I think on a 3-2 pitch, struck out to end the game. And it was his fifth time striking out in the game. And that's pretty rare for a guy to strike out five times in a 9-inning game. But I have been to a game where I saw it happen. The one game I've ever been to at Dodger Stadium, it was in 2010, which I'll always know because my son was 10 months old. And so, like, okay, he was born, carry the one. So 2010, we went to Anaheim, we went to San Diego, we went to L.A. There used to be a team, they're still there in Anaheim. It just doesn't call itself Anaheim anymore, you know, marketing. Jason Hayward, still in the game. Jason Hayward for the Braves. Might have been batting second, you know, kind of, you kind of want to be up in the order. Churio batted leadoff yesterday. Struck, Kershaw pitched for LA, also still in the game. And Hayward struck out five times in a 9-inning game. And it was just like the Brewers yesterday. They lost, maybe yesterday was 5-4, some game, some score like that. I will probably always remember that day. It was the day John Wooden died. And a lot of what the Dodgers did that night, naturally, was to pay respects to him, Vin Scully on the scoreboard and everything, the late Vin Scully. I was watching them last night, and also a game that came right down to the end, 5-4 up, Tigers 2-on, 9th inning, and I heard the organist play Birds of a Feather. And there's almost nothing better in baseball than the Dodgers organ music choices. I loved it. Billie Eilish. Time out here. We'll talk some more. Again, lines open for your calls. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Welcome back. Mike Shope here. I've had the Golf Channel on in here today because no baseball. I didn't find Rockies Rays anywhere. Although, I've liked the point on Twitter today how the Rays home white uniforms actually look cool given that they're playing outside. So maybe it was sportslogos.net that had the tweet. And, you know, they've had games, I guess other games in the past where they did wear the whites outdoors somewhere and guys in all-star games. So you have seen these before, but the way that, you know, Bulldog's not here to jump on this, the way that Tropicana Field kind of makes everything look dingy. Yeah, looks like they've got maybe a kind of a cool vibe this year against in their game today. Opening day for the Rays against the Rockies. Classic matchup. The Sabres, by the way, we're talking about them. They have won 10 of their last 12 home games. So at least you know you're going down there and maybe just sort of trying to block out the big picture and the standings and everything like that. Like last night, if you are able to do that, would have been a party. And they've had some really good results here in the last, what's that, about a month? 10-2 at home. Went through the goal differential stuff. That's just going to make you crazy. Maybe they can still pull something out. Yeah, no afternoon baseball other than that one game that I can't find. So Golf Channel, which we have on a lot, Thursday, Friday afternoons. This one today, though, it's been a rain delay since basically whenever I turned it on. So they're talking to golfers. You know, I'm realizing that's what I've been watching all day is just like golf talk with the sound down. But Roger Clemens was just on. They're in Houston this week, and Golf Channel was interviewing Roger Clemens, and I can't hear it. But they put a graphic up from the night he struck out 20 batters. It was against Seattle. And it said on the graphic that he played 27 holes of golf the day before that. So, you pitchers out there, that might be the secret. Sam Panayotovic joins us on Fridays. I talked to him about the tournament and some NFL future stuff. We'll have that for you next here on WGR.